All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Are you enjoying your time at Tech Ed so far? Good. I certainly hope so. You survived lunch. That's a good start. Welcome to this session, Microsoft SharePoint 2013 and Office 365 Upgrade Strategy and Tactics. My name is Dan Holm, and for the next 75 minutes, we're going to be talking about when, why, and how you and your organization might move forward into SharePoint 2013 on-premise or Office 365 in the cloud. First, let me tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Dan Holm. I'm an MVP in SharePoint Server and have been for about 6 years now. Before that, I was an MVP in Active Directory. And I actually am based in beautiful Maui, Hawaii. So this is what it looks like outside my office. The few days a week, I'm home. And this is the beach I hang out at. So if ever you can come to Hawaii, please do come to Maui and give me a call. The SharePoint community is very small, so I'd love to share my island with you. I split my time between Maui and London, so I'm spending about half of my time now in Europe supporting European customers. I work for a small consulting company called Intellium, which is a boutique firm serving mostly global 1,000 caliber organizations. So I spend my time primarily with very large enterprises, but I also have some small and medium business customers as well. And one of the things that I hope to do during this session, the primary goal, is to share with you the conversations I've got with customers, large and small, about their plans, their vision, their roadmap, their strategies for delivering business value on SharePoint 2013 and Office 365. One of the companies I work with out of the United States is NBC Television, which is one of the large television networks. And for them, I'm the Microsoft Technologies Consultant for the during the Olympic Games. So I support NBC during the broadcast of the games back to the United States audience. I've done four Olympics so far, and we're just getting ready for the Winter Olympics in 2014 from Sochi. And it's actually interesting because this building, as you might know, is part of the Madrid candidate city bid for the 2020 Olympics. And if Madrid gets the Olympics in 2020, I will actually be working right here. This is where the broadcast center will be based. So it's kind of cool to be here. The most important information on this slide is my contact information. I will have it up at the end of the presentation as well. Feel free to reach out to me via Twitter or Facebook or email and continue this conversation on after today. Because my goal is to help you be successful with SharePoint. And I can only do that if you ask questions and also share what you're learning along your journey. The slides will be available on the TechNet site on Channel 9, so please don't feel like you have to take tons of pictures of all of the slides. And in addition, I will post the slides to my own SkyDrive, so you can get them either from the event or from my SkyDrive. And during this event, I'm going to try something I've not done before, which is I will be live tweeting key points of the event as we go. So hopefully this will work. And if, in fact, you are a Twitter fan, you can follow along right now. But this is mainly for people who weren't lucky enough to come to Madrid for this event. So with those logistics out of the way, this is what the session is all about, SharePoint and Office 365. And in this session, I hope to share with you a roadmap for your enterprise strategy to these new platforms to try to answer the questions I get from customers about when, how, and why to migrate. My goal is to provide some insight, some clarity, and some balance to give you some feeling for what's happening in the real world, what other enterprises are planning and doing. And we will also talk, of course, about the technology of upgrade. We'll spend a few moments talking about the things you need to know to upgrade successfully at the technical level. But this is not really a heavy technical session because in all of the upgrades I've done, from Windows 3.5.1 to Windows NT 4, and all the way up to SharePoint 2010 to 2013, in 2 decades of working in technology, I've learned that the technical part of upgrade is never the problem. The problem is aligning it with your business needs, keeping things going and delivering business value and figuring out how to pay for it. Those are the things that really matter. And so that's what this session is going to focus primarily on. We'll see what you need to know to upgrade and why it works and the key technical points. But it really is about how to be successful from a business level at your strategy. And of course, I'll be answering questions along the way. So if something isn't clear, if you have any questions or you want to share some of your experience, please don't hesitate to raise your hand. With these lights in my eyes, I may not see you, so you may have to wave a little bit. but I definitely want to answer your questions. Of course, after this session, I will be available to answer questions as well, and then you can find me at the AvPoint booth tomorrow afternoon at 1:30, where I will be doing a book signing. We have a 10 or 20 copies of my book that we'll be giving out, and you have my email address as well. So with that, we're going to approach this session by answering questions, by answering the kinds of questions I get from my customers as I travel around the world and help them chart their strategies. The first question we need to answer, which is really the most important question of all, is why does SharePoint matter? And I would argue, and many of you have probably heard me say this, that in the end, SharePoint doesn't matter. What matters is business. Business is trying to get something done. And along the way, they identify objectives. And those objectives either increase value or decrease risk. Now, increased value can be delivering greater revenues. It can be reducing costs. It can be increasing productivity. Reducing risk also can take several dimensions. But in the end, that's what really matters, is what the business is trying to do. And SharePoint is just a technology. That's all it is. And luckily, it does deliver some of those business objectives. It delivers quite a few. But it's just a technology. And just because you put SharePoint in place doesn't mean you are doing something you haven't done before, perhaps. How many of us have done collaboration long before SharePoint came along? Everybody. What did we use before SharePoint? Email, anyone? Standing around and talking with people, anyone? So when you put SharePoint in place, did you stop email?
No.
Did you stop talking with people?
No.
You kept doing those things. SharePoint was just one more tool to help you achieve those objectives. And just in the same vein, we need to think about SharePoint 2013 is just another, or Office 365 is just another new tool to help us move forward. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get rid of things we've used in the past. And as you'll see in this presentation, it doesn't necessarily mean we'll get rid of SharePoint 2010 or even SharePoint 2007. All of these things are just technologies. And only when the technology can actually deliver the value or reduce the risk does the technology suddenly take on meaning. So we have to always begin with the fact that it's really business that matters, and this is just a technology. Now, with that in place, why should we think about SharePoint 2013? Well, in order to understand my answer to this question, we have to go back into ancient history, to the year 2006. Now, in 2006, in September or October, Microsoft finished coding what was to become Windows SharePoint Services version 3 and Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007. That was when that product was finished, it was sealed up, it was RTM'd. And at that point, in late 2006, Microsoft started looking ahead to what the next product would be, which ended up, of course, being SharePoint 2010. Now, let's think about what the world was like in late 2006 in relation to what the world is like today. Take this, for example. I think all of us would agree this has had a big impact on technology. At the consumer level, the personal level, as well as the business level, and what people expect technology to do. What was Facebook in autumn of 2006? Not even available to the public. It was only available to high school and college students. It was released publicly in late 2006. What about this device? I think we would all agree this changed the face of technology. This is what caused us to have to think about bring your own device and consumerization of IT. What was the iPhone in late 2006? Nobody knew except for Steve Jobs. It wasn't announced and released until summer of 2007. So, it was in a pre-Facebook, pre-iPhone world that Microsoft started thinking about what it needed to be put into its next product, which was to become SharePoint 2010. SharePoint 2010 was designed in a pre-Facebook, pre-iPhone world. And that's very important to remember because the years that it followed really turned everything around. The world's completely different today technologically than it was in 2006. Today, people understand technology. 5 or 10 years ago, the biggest block to upgrading was users. How do we convince users to use this new technology, and what's the user experience going to be? Today, users, for the most part, understand different user interfaces because they have their phones, and every app is a little bit different. and they're familiar with technology. My mom this week used SharePoint for the first time and OneNote with zero training and fell in love with them. She's 70 years old. So whether it's the older generation or the new millennials who don't even know the world without the internet, the workforce, our employees, our customers, our vendors, our partners, understand technology and have very high expectations for what technology can deliver. They come into the business with a mindset that if they have a problem, there is an app for that, to steal a line from the competitor. They think there's a targeted, narrow, easy solution to whatever problem they're facing. That's the psychology of people today, very different than 6 years ago. Then they're carrying devices that we could have never even imagined. You look down in the expo hall and you see form factors and you listen to the things that are being released right now. Crazy new devices that we couldn't have ever even imagined. And they're connecting with each other using tools and concepts that we didn't even talk about in 2006. The cloud, which was, you know, being developed and was starting to become a point of discussion in 2006, 2007, is now a reality. We all know it's there, and it's happening, and it's real, and it's ready for prime time. And along the way, all of us who are in IT are under increasing pressure for control. We're releasing information into the cloud and onto devices that we don't manage anymore. And we're under increasing regulations from our local and national governments, from pan-national organizations, to control information more effectively. These trends really turn the world around. And these are the trends that Microsoft identified as being critical to decide what they put into SharePoint 2013. So these are the very trends that drove Microsoft's strategic decisions for what this new wave of products needed to have. So when you're asking yourself, should I use SharePoint 2010 or SharePoint 2013, the thing you have to remember is that SharePoint 2010 is so 2006. It was designed and spec'd out in a pre-iPhone, pre-Facebook world that simply isn't the world we live in today. So SharePoint 2010 was a great product for what it was designed for. The world changed a lot. And 2010, while it is a good product, is probably not going to support the types of workloads and requirements that we're going to be putting onto it today. Users have multiple devices, they're mobile, cross-browser. Those things alone mean 2013, not 2010. And then you go beyond that into social and BI and the heavier workloads. So SharePoint 2010, while a good product, was not meant really for today's world. So with that thought then, should I upgrade? This is obviously the key question of this session, and my fundamental position is don't upgrade. Instead, move forward. Now what do I mean by that? I mean, remember we talked about the fact that the business has objectives. It's trying to do things that either increase value or decrease risk. Those are the things you have to focus on, and you have to decide how to deliver those objectives that the business is bringing to you in the IT organization. And what SharePoint can do, perhaps, to support those objectives. Now, at this point, I'm going to introduce a term that I use that I might use a little differently than other people, but that is the term workload. The idea is when the business is trying to achieve something, SharePoint might be able to support that workload. And that term, workload, is really the technical implementation of the business objective. You might call it the solution, the service, the application, the business outcome, the whatever it is you're doing, that is the workload. And it can be a really big workload, like enterprise search or enterprise social. Or it might be a very small workload, like a new team site for a project that's being launched. So whether it's a really big workload or a really small workload, if it increases value or decreases risk and SharePoint can support it, that's what we really need to focus on for the time being. So we're going to be really talking about what I would call a workload-based evolution of our service rather than a big upgrade. Big upgrade projects, I really dissuade organizations from even thinking about. Don't think about the big upgrade, how we take everything we're currently doing in SharePoint 2010 and move it to 2013. Why? Because it decreases value potentially. It takes your resources away from doing what the business needs. It costs money. And it can increase risk because there's potential of disrupting or breaking things that are working just fine today. And I'm not the only one who's thinking this. I was talking with the CIO of a Fortune 20 bank, a very large global bank, and he told me flat out, as they look back over their history in IT, upgrade projects have provided little to no value. And so they are very specifically saying, we're not going to really talk about upgrade. We need to focus on moving forward. So instead of big upgrade projects, we're going to think about moving forward. And to sort of summarize what I'm saying here, we're going to move forward delivering new value. And then over time, we will consider migrating existing workloads. Things that we already have in place, sure, we'll move them forward when they increase value or decrease risk. There might be, for example, opportunities to take a workload and do it better in a new version and increase value. Or it might be that having the old version is now costing us too much money, and so we can increase value by moving it forward. Or it may be that we can't do the e-discovery we need in the old version, so we're going to move it forward and migrate. But we only do it when it makes sense, not just because we want to upgrade. So don't upgrade. Move forward, and over time, migrate those solutions. Now, we'll get more detailed about this, but this is sort of the fundamental process here. So when should I begin moving to 2013? This is a question I get very regularly as well, and my general guidance is don't wait. And there's a couple of reasons for that, starting with what many of my customers say is their standard procedure. We always wait for Service Pack 1. How many of you guys can relate to that? Yeah, okay. So I have been in IT for 20 years. I understand why we say that. I remember Service Pack 2 of Windows 2000 that broke all kinds of things. I remember Windows Vista, as many of us do, and how slow file copies were. I understand why we waited for Service Pack 1. And the reason was Microsoft never really thoroughly tested their products in the real world. Yes, they had the early adopter programs, and they had beta testers, and they got a little bit of feedback, and they tested it on their own employees. But it wasn't until the product was really released and they got huge amounts of very sad people to install the software right away and see what broke, that they got real feedback, they fixed the problems, and they released a service pack. I understand that. But that was the old world. Today, when Microsoft released Office 365, for example, and SharePoint 2013, they already had hundreds of millions of customers running it in production in Office 365. That's a very different world than it was before. Now, for the very first time with this release, for the very first time, Microsoft is actually running their own software for real customers. Now I know they've had early adopter and they've had their internal stuff, their dog food. But inside Microsoft, their employees are used to change, they're used to being beta testers, they're used to things breaking, and they're used to working around problems. How many of you would say your employees are just like Microsoft employees? Yeah. In the real world, that's not what people do. So now that Microsoft has given ownership of the cloud services to the product teams, that means that the SharePoint engineers get a call when something goes wrong. If there's a ticket in Office 365 for SharePoint and it escalates high enough, it lands in the lap of someone who actually writes the code for SharePoint. You can bet after that call at 3 o'clock in the morning, they're going to fix that problem. And so the types of changes we saw between the beta of SharePoint 2013 and RTM are representative of the types of changes we used to see between RTM and Service Pack 1. And I honestly believe the quality of the product of SharePoint 2013 at RTM last November was the highest for sure of SharePoint and maybe of any Microsoft product I've ever worked with. That's not to mean it's perfect. No software is. But it is at least at that Service Pack 1 quality level. So while I understand why we waited for Service Pack 1, those reasons no longer apply. There is now plenty of feedback and plenty of fixes being baked into the product before Service Pack 1. The next thing to think about with Service Pack 1 is what is a service pack? Traditionally, it's been fixes to things that broke. I think we're all starting to realize that we're getting into what I would call a versionless world, where if and when a service pack is released for SharePoint 2013, it will fix things, it will roll up patches, but it may also introduce new features. I think most of us kind of get the feeling that's probably going to happen. So if it's going to introduce new features, then what? Do you wait for Service Pack 2 to fix the problems that Service Pack 1 introduced in its new features? Or do you wait for Service Pack 3 or 4? What is a service pack? And last but not least, when is it going to come out? We all know from yesterday that Windows Server 2012 R2 is now in preview. There has not yet been a Service Pack 1 for Windows Server 2012. We, you know, Microsoft has not said anything about a Service Pack for SharePoint, but we know there's a SharePoint conference coming up in March. Do the math. We may be waiting and waiting and waiting and get a Service Pack after the next version even comes out. So all of these things that we used to put into our math about when to upgrade really just aren't applicable in the new world where Microsoft is building and iterating quickly in the cloud for its services and then bringing those features into on-prem. That is the new world and we need to adjust. Now those are all technical reasons to not wait. The biggest reason to not wait is your business won't wait. Your business is trying to get things done. And if they come to you and say, we need this, and you say, no, we can't do it because we're not upgrading until Service Pack 1, they will go somewhere else. And I can't tell you how clear this is from business. As the one thing I hear for every customer in every country is the lead on the business side of the project, whether it's collaboration or content management or even a CEO, will tell me flat out, this is a real quote, we're the ones with the budget. If IT can't deliver, we will go around them. Now that is a scary statement. It's scary if you care about your job and your organization's in your IT organization. And to me, it's even more scary for the business. Because if the business goes around IT and starts using cloud services and sort of just grabbing whatever it needs at the time, they're not going to be managed, they're not going to be integrated, and they're going to be introducing risk and cost that later on will be problematic. So it's not healthy for IT and it's not healthy for the business that this is what the business is thinking, but this is what they are thinking. And so you can't wait. You've got to keep moving forward. So how do you move forward? What if you have SharePoint 2010, and we'll talk about 2007 later, how can you loosen the wheels to start moving things and becoming more agile in the delivery of your service? And actually, let me catch up with some of my tweets here. I got so caught up, I forgot to do that. There we go. Let me catch up. Let me make sure I got the right ones. There we go. So let's say that this is, let's assume this is your existing service. You've got SharePoint 2010 delivering certain workloads. Again, it's the workloads that really provide the business value. Perhaps you are doing some collaboration. You've got an intranet and maybe a line of business application on SharePoint. And so what can you do to start moving forward with SharePoint? Well, I would suggest that you don't wait until the business comes to you and says, we need this tomorrow, and it can only be done on 2013, and then you have to figure out how to get 2013 to work. Be ahead of your business and put SharePoint 2013 into your service portfolio as soon as you possibly can. Now, in other words, stand it up so that at least you're used to it, you figured out how to manage it and administer it, and you've worked your way around it. And then one of the things you can do with 2013 that a lot of people still haven't realized is you can actually start putting some of your services on 2013. The services that can be published across farms, like search, user profile, BCS, there's a couple of others, metadata, those can be published from a 2013 services farm down to a 2010 farm that's doing all the real work. Now, if you do that, you as IT get some of the benefits that have been introduced manageability-wise into the 2013 service application model. Your users aren't impacted at all. Nothing changes because those farms still work the way they always did. They don't know any of the new features. They don't provide any new user interfaces. They're just getting services from 2013. But you've made a good start. Then you think, if I let's put search in 2013, I can scale it better than I could in 2010. I no longer need fast. It's cheaper, provides value, blah, blah, blah. But you can also start putting some of the functionality in that 2013 farm. Maybe you put your enterprise search center in 2013. So when someone's searching the whole organization, they get all the really amazing benefits of 2013 search. And 2013 search really is one of the big wins in 2013. It's an amazing set of capabilities. Maybe you put your My Sites in 2013 because then users can take advantage of SkyDrive Pro technologies to take documents offline. Maybe you do a little bit of the news feed features in 2013. But you start moving some of those functional bits into 2013. Then you start taking advantage of 2013 for new workloads. When the business comes and says, hey, we need something, and the requirements for that objective can be better met in 2013, you've got a farm ready to go and you can support those workloads. Even things as simple as team sites are so much more effective in 2013 than they were in 2010 because they're cross-browser, they're HTML5, the list goes on and on. When I was building intranets and team sites in 2010, the number of tweaks I had to make just to make it usable for users was huge. In 2013, Microsoft solved many of the rough edges from a user experience standpoint of even team sites. And so you put something like a new team site in 2013 because it works better. And users aren't as worried about different interfaces as they were years ago. Because, again, they carry devices, they're used to different interfaces. And this is really discoverable. This is very easy in the new interface for users. Again, even my 70-year-old mom, without any training, figured out how to use a SharePoint site this week. Now, the next step then is to realize that if you have big workloads that Microsoft has already invested in 2013, you really should put those on 2013 and not on 2010. Specifically, mobile, social networking, search, and WCM. Those workloads are significantly improved in 2013. And if you try to do them in 2010, you're going to be running into roadblocks and obstacles and limitations and needing third-party tools, which cost money, faster than if you just simply did it in 2013 to begin with. Those workloads are really, really big. And I like to say that friends don't let friends do search and social networking in 2010. If you're going to roll these out, roll them out on 2013. You'll get the value out of those. So now we put one of our major new workloads in 2013. And notice we still haven't gotten rid of 2010 because we still haven't gotten rid of email and we still haven't gotten rid of talking to people. All of these are just different ways of moving the business forward as it matures in its objectives and its workloads. So we end up having a bit of a hybrid model. Not the hybrid that we see on the banners around the conference center that's all about on-prem or cloud, but hybrid of versions, hybrid of services, email, Link, Yammer, Skype, SharePoint, Exchange. All of these things are tools helping us achieve our business objectives. Now, all of this roadmap that I've given you, I was showing you as pictures, but in the slide deck, there is a slide that has everything. There are actually a number of hidden slides that document more deeply what I was showing you. So that was sort of a vision into how you might move forward from 2010. What if you have 2007? How many of you are still using only 2007, not 2010? Okay, there's still a good number. If you're in this boat, and I've had a number of customers in this boat, including that large bank I was telling you about, they were like, should we, you know, they were already in the middle of their 2010 farm build out, and their basic question to me is, should we just dump this project and go with 2013? So to answer this question in a very short time, I've got a flowchart for you that I call the 2010-2013 workload decision tree. So remember, we're talking about workloads, specific things you're trying to do. You start with the question of defining your business need, defining what it is you're trying to do, and then ask yourself, can it be done in 2010? And if it can be done in 2010, it can be done better in 2013. And so you should go with 2013. Now, this is really basically gospel truth. If something could be done in 2010, Microsoft improved it, made the user experience better, made it scale better in 2013. Now, that's not to say that 2013 is a perfect product. Especially some of the net new features definitely have some rough edges. But if it could be done in 2010, it can be done better in 2013. If it can't be done in 2010 at all, then you have to say, can this be done in 2013? And if so, it's an obvious choice. And if not, you're going to need to go to another product. Now, that's a flowchart that even a CIO can understand. So this is something that you can show your management. And it's simple and it's a little cheeky, but it really is true. If it can be done in 2010, it can be done better in 2013. So we're really talking about moving forward and supporting our business objectives with SharePoint 2013 on a thoughtful workload-based approach. So now, can we upgrade? Remember, I said don't upgrade, migrate. Because even from a technical perspective, upgrade is dead. Now, this is from both a business and a technical perspective now, and let's take a look at the technology behind Upgrade. Because as you'll see, while we call it Upgrade, it really isn't an upgrade anymore. So here's a high-level view of Upgrade, and many of you will have heard this story, so we'll talk through this fairly quickly. To go from 2010 to 2013, you cannot simply insert the 2013 DVD and click Setup. Instead, you have to create a new 2013 farm. That's the only way to do it, a brand new farm. And then you copy your databases to that new farm, and when they get attached, those databases are upgraded. But the really interesting thing that is happening now with this upgrade is that the site collections themselves, the things that face the users, remain in 2010 mode. And so in concept, you could migrate your farm to 2013 and users wouldn't even know. Now the reason this happens is because of a bit of technical magic that Microsoft did in this product. In SharePoint 2013, there is, of course, the 2013 root folder, the 15 hive, as many of us call it. That's C, program files, blah, 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 bin. That is there, and so 2013 sites run against that root folder. And this folder contains your site definitions and templates and features and all those kinds of things. So that's what we would expect. Now, what Microsoft did that was very clever was in 2013, you also get the 2010 root folder, the 14 hive. And so a site collection that has been attached from your 2010 farm will remain in 2010 mode and will continue to run against the 14 folder with all of the features and templates and site definitions and customizations that are in there. So you can think of it as virtualization. It's not really, but kind of. It's like two different forks. If a site collection thinks it's 2013, it runs against the 2013 root folder. If it thinks it's 2010, it runs against the 2010 root folder. And the 2013 farms include the 2010 workflow engine and support all of the customization models that we used in 2010, like full trust and sandbox solutions. So in effect, you've got two systems in one. You can think of it that way from a conceptual perspective. So when you upgrade your databases, the site collections continue to run against the 14 root folder. And then over time, you can upgrade those site collections to 2013 mode, and basically it's just a switch that tells them to start running against the 15 folder. And now you get all of the features and site definitions and templates and capabilities of SharePoint 2013. And you can even preview it. There's a preview mode that effectively copies the site collection into a new site collection, new URL, running against the 15 folder, so that you can make sure everything's working, but your users are still in the production SharePoint 2010 mode site collection. So this was a really clever way of separating the user-facing experience and content of SharePoint from the underlying infrastructure. And it was a very important move. And even after you start upgrading site collections, you can continue to have some site collections in 2010 mode, some in 2013. You can even create new site collections in 2010 mode. So it gives you a lot of flexibility. And from a delegation perspective, farm administrators do the first bits, creating a new farm, attaching the databases. And then the site collections can either be upgraded by farm administrators or can be delegated and done by site collection administrators. So basically, the owner, represented as the site collection administrator, can upgrade the site collection. So this is a really, really, really great model here. So to upgrade the broad technical steps, you're going to build your servers, you're going to build your farm, you're going to deploy your customizations. So remember, while SharePoint 2013 has the 14 root folder, you're going to need to install your SharePoint 2010 customizations into that root folder before you attach your data or your content that it relies on those features. So you deploy your customizations, upgrade your services, so you're going to bring over your services first, migrate to claims. These two are backwards order here. Upgrade content databases and migrate to claims. Now you can migrate to claims in your 2010 farm before you migrate to 2013, and that's actually recommended, but you can also attach the content database and then migrate to claims. Upgrade your site collections to 2013 mode, and along the way, of course, back up everything first, make sure you've thought about minimizing downtime, monitor progress, and test, test, test. This is a much cleaner upgrade process than from 2007 to 2010. It's significantly improved, and my experience with customers have been that they're pretty happy with it. I'm not hearing huge screams of pain from customers as I did with 2007 to 2010. So the story is good, but we, as enterprise IT people have to take it on ourselves to test and plan effectively. Now, all of this is very different than the 2007 to 2010 migration story. From 2007 to 2010, when you brought your content database in, you had what was called visual upgrade, which meant it was a 2010 site collection, but it just used a 2007 master page. And it sort of faked out the users to make it look like a 2007 site. But in reality, it was a 2010 site already, which meant you had to mitigate all of your backward compatibility problems before upgrading the site collections. Now, with this new mode, in theory, a 2010 site collection should work perfectly well on a 2013 farm. There are only a few technical places where the architecture could lead you astray, and so you always want to test and plan. But again, I'm not hearing huge screams of pain. And the story is significantly improved. So the good news is, from a technical standpoint, the story is definitely improved. Now, if you have 2007, there is no direct upgrade path to 2013. If you're going to use out-of-box tools, you would have to migrate your 2010 farm to 20, or sorry, your 2007 farm to 2010, and then upgrade your 2010 farm, migrate it to 2013. And again, the hard step is going to be going from 2007 to 2010. That's where so many enterprises did so many things that broke the environment in 2007, including things like installing the Fabulous 40 templates that, of course, weren't supported in 2010. So there's all kinds of remediation you have to do to take that first step. If you clean up your environment enough to do the first step, the second step is easy. And I would actually recommend, in concept, focusing very hard on the first step, getting it done, and the next day, go to the next step. Don't let your 2010 farm get dirty and corrupted like your 2007 farm did. If it's running well in 2010, it probably will migrate well. So in theory, you should sort of aim at that, not having an extended period of time where you're sitting in 2010. Better yet, get third-party migration tools. Because this process, while it's technically possible, is usually not possible from a business perspective. It's going to take time to do this. You're going to need to take one team at a time or small groups. It's going to be granular, not all at once. And also, you're going to have a lot of re-architecture and rethinking, because probably the way you did things in 2007 is not really what you'd want to do in 2013. You either learned some lessons, your business has changed, or the technology has changed. And for any one of those reasons, you're going to need to rearrange and restructure and tweak things, and that's where third-party tools come in very, very, very handy. Now, all of this process that we've been talking about here was developed by Microsoft for one very obvious reason: Office 365. So as of January of this year, Microsoft had hundreds of millions of customers in Office 365 running on the 2010 versions of the product. They needed to roll out the 2013 versions of the product. And they certainly couldn't expect hundreds of millions of customers to stop and retrain their users and fix all the backward compatibility problems. They needed to make it possible to upgrade the service without impacting the customers as heavily as in the past. And so basically, this was all about making their service easier to upgrade, and we're benefiting from it. And if you didn't see an upgrade from Office 365 version 14 to Office 365 version 15, let me show you what it basically looked like. This was a sample tenancy that I had for one of my own domain names. And in early May, I got an email that said, in 4 weeks, you're going to get upgraded. And it had links that I could use to understand what I needed to do as an IT organization, and messages that I could pass on to end users to let them know what was going to happen, which is fairly minor, actually. So I got this note, 4 weeks' notice, and then a little bit closer to the date, I got a note saying, this is the exact date you're going to be upgraded. I got this note a couple of weeks before the actual date. And then on June 2nd, I got a note saying, congratulations, you've been upgraded. It's all done. And when I opened up my site, it looked like this. And for those of you who don't recognize this, this looks exactly the same as it did in version 14. There's no difference, except for a little bar across the top that appears for site collection administrators that says, hey, you can upgrade if you want to. So this is running against the 2010 mode of SharePoint 2013. And as soon as I go through that process, I'll get a 2013 site collection. So Microsoft had to create an experience for its real-world customers that allowed them to migrate the service while not impacting the customers. Don't you think in our own enterprises, every upgrade should be that easy? That's what we should be aiming at. We should be aiming at being able to migrate ourselves as a service without necessarily impacting or at least minimizing the impact on our end users. This is the vision we all want to hit in our private clouds, in our on-premise environments. In this version-to-version upgrade story from 2010 to 2013, we only can do what's called database attach upgrade. That's what we've been talking about. New farm, attach a content database from the old farm. There's also a different type of upgrade called build-to-build. Many of us would call this an update rather than an upgrade, adding a service pack, adding a hotfix, adding a cumulative update. So, for example, going from 2013 RTM to 2013 with one of the cumulative updates. This would be a build-to-build upgrade. In build-to-build, you still can do in-place upgrade. You can go to your 2013 farm and apply the cumulative update. That's what we've always done. You can also do a database attach upgrade, where you create a new 2013 farm with the cumulative update, and then you attach the content databases. Now, this latter option is how Microsoft upgrades Office 365. They do not just click setup.exe on the cumulative update on the public cloud. That would be a little risky, as they discovered, actually. So this is something also that we should be really thinking about for our on-premise environments. We should stop thinking about everything as being a setup.exe upgrade and start thinking about rolling the forward and moving forward even from our servers. So instead of updating your existing farm, create a new farm, apply the updates, attach the content databases, and move your farm forward that way. Upgrade your own process of upgrading. All this takes is good documentation and automation. And while you upgrade from 2010 to 2013, you can be documenting settings of web applications and services and your farm. And you can be automating those with PowerShell. Everything can be automated, pretty much. So you can get to a point, and if you're using virtualization instead of physical hardware, you don't have to worry so much about that. So over a weekend, you can deploy some new VMs, have it completely automated, attach your content databases, and you'll be good to go with a weekend database attach upgrade. And again, from a service delivery perspective, that's where we should be in our private clouds, just like that's where Microsoft is in its public cloud. One second. All right. Any questions on the on-premise before we move to the cloud? Yep. Yes. Yeah, great question. So this question is, what about farm configuration settings? How do those migrate? And the answer is they don't migrate. You do have to create your new farm and configure those settings, which is exactly why I was saying you should become aware of your settings enough. You've documented them. You've set them manually that for the next time you do it, you can PowerShell it. And all those things, almost all of them, can be done with PowerShell. So if you invest a little bit of time in your 2010 to 2013 migration to do it right, that will make every other migration easier. The biggest problem we all face as IT professionals is we have too much to do. We have too many fires we're fighting. And so we're always being reactive. And to become better at service delivery, we really have to become proactive, part of which is documenting and automating. And third-party tools can help as well. There are third-party tools that will migrate settings just like that for you. But out of the box, it's PowerShell. And that doesn't mean it's easy or fun, but a little bit of time invested really pays off.
How about the WSPs for 2010? If you upgrade, you have many custom solutions that you deployed. How do you do that in 2013 with the database attached?
Yeah, so his question is about the WSPs, about the customizations and solutions that you have in your 2010 farm and getting them into your 2013 farm. So first of all, you're always testing. You've got a lab. You're not just doing this straight into production. You do need to test and make sure the customizations will work on 2013, and you want to make sure your vendor will support you. Now, this is becoming less of an issue now that we're 9 months into SharePoint 2013, but you do want to make sure that your vendors are ready to stand behind you from a support perspective with 2013. Once you have nailed those two things down, WSPs can be deployed with PowerShell into your new farm. And so that's part of what you want to document and automate.
Yeah, but if you've built it specifically for 2010, can you just deploy to 2013 without changing the code?
I gotcha. From a developer's perspective, if you've created a solution in 2013, can it run on 2013? In concept, yes, because you're running against the same features and templates in the 2010 root folder. However, the one thing that's shared in that two-folder structure I mentioned are some of the core DLLs. So you've got the features and templates in the two different folders, but then they're all going through SharePoint DLLs. If you're doing something that relies on an API that has changed, it might break in 2013. So from a pure technical standpoint, there's no guarantee it will work. But it certainly is at least an 80% solution. How many of you have done upgrades and would say it's closer to like a 90% solution with 2010 to 2013? Yeah, I think that's kind of where I fall, 90-95%. You always want to test, but it's way better than 2007 to 2010. And what I see as a consultant is people are scared to death of the upgrade because of how hard it was from, V2 to V3 and from V3 to 2010. So people are overly scared. And the good news is I'm not hearing ridiculous screams of pain. So you're probably going to be okay. Yeah, your solution should go into the correct folder when they're deployed. I wouldn't want to answer right off the top of my head the specifics because I don't remember. Does anyone want to answer that question of how I make sure that my customization goes into the appropriate folder, one, both, or the other? It's part of the manifest in the solution, right? Yeah, so that's where I get to say, I'm an IT pro, not a developer. So there's your answer. And that's where if you had a solution that you wanted to run in both 14 and 15, you would need to recompile it to rebuild it for the 15 environment.
Also, just to add also for the DLLs, you mentioned about the DLLs, it's two different GACs. So for SharePoint 2013, it relies on .NET 4 GAC, which is separate GAC from the SharePoint 2010 one.
Yeah, so... as opposed to the GAC.
But otherwise, it should be okay.
Yeah, so his point is that there's also different GACs between 14 and 15. So the problems tend to be when you have DLLs deployed to the bin folder. Again, this would be more developer things, so I'm stepping into territory that I know I'm going to get in trouble with. So definitely look at some of the resources on developing customizations for 14 and 15. The good news is for those of us who aren't developing solutions, in which case you can find your own answers, the ones that are commercially available and downloadable, you will at this point be able to find out, are they compatible, are they supported from the vendor, and then obviously test it, but you'll have a good experience. Let me take a quick look at time here. All right, yeah, let's keep going. So now let's turn our attention to the cloud, and we'll come back and answer more questions in a bit here. Office 365 versus on-premise. We're being given a very big glass of Kool-Aid at TechEd about the cloud, right, and Office 365. But the reality is they're still on-prem. And Microsoft just now, in fact, I'm not even sure in New Orleans, there were so many banners that said hybrid all over the place. The world is really a hybrid world. So Office 365 or on-prem, let's look at that and evaluate it a bit. And the first point I'll make is to balance out what Microsoft is saying. The cloud is not just, in the SharePoint world, the cloud is not just Office 365. There are different flavors of cloud. So first of all, you've got the software as a service version of the cloud, which is Office 365. That we're hearing a lot about. We sort of understand what that is. But there's also the infrastructure as a service version of the cloud, which in the SharePoint space is represented by Windows Azure Virtual Machines. The ability to actually put a virtual machine in the cloud, manage it completely from the bits up, just like you would in your own data center. And there's other players in this space, the third-party vendors who have infrastructure as a service models. Then there's what I would call managed infrastructure as a service, where your organization outsources to, say, Hewlett-Packard or Hitachi or Fujitsu to manage your cloud. And in that case, they're putting on-premise versions of the products into their own cloud and providing it to you as a service. And last but not least, there's the on-prem, the pure on-premise environment of SharePoint 2013. And I would ask that we all stop using the word on-premise and start using the phrase private cloud. Because that's what we should be building. We should be aiming at something that is as elastic and responsive and low cost and agile as possible. Because that's why our business is going outside of IT, is because they're not finding those things in IT. So while we will never be able to do it as well as Microsoft, because we simply don't have the scale that gives Microsoft the ability to do what it does, we can aim at getting as good as possible, at managing our service and delivering it as a private cloud service. So we have those different flavors of cloud. And what the real question is not do we use one or the other, but what workloads are best in each of those clouds? So from the private cloud perspective, the on-premise version of SharePoint, we're all familiar with that. We've been listening and learning about SharePoint for years. But then there's Office 365. And I would say there are certain workloads that are very well suited to Office 365. For example, certain types of collaboration. Team sites in Office 365 are just a no-brainer to set up. You can have an Office 365 tenancy and team site set up in minutes, much faster than it takes to run SharePoint setup.exe. Now, remember, we're talking about workloads here. And we'll talk later about concerns about the cloud, but there's always the concern about, you know, certain types of information shouldn't be in Microsoft's cloud for whatever reason. But in every business, there are certain types of collaboration that work with classes of information that are not regulated as tightly. And just because you have some classes of information that are tightly regulated and maybe need to be kept on-premise, there's other classes of information that can be put into a cloud scenario quite effectively. So collaboration in the cloud is easy. It's just painfully easy. Extranet scenarios, where you're collaborating with people outside your organization, Office 365 is super well suited to for a couple of reasons. One, it's already outside your firewall. You're not having to punch holes through your firewall or give VPN access or do reverse gateways and proxies in order to get your external users in. Secondly, from a licensing perspective, if you didn't know this, you can share sites and documents with external users in Office 365 for free, zero cost. And you don't even have to put their user accounts in a directory. That's taken care of by Office 365. And you can even share with anonymous users in Office 365, which you simply cannot do in on-premise private cloud installations of SharePoint. So there are some really brilliant technical as well as business reasons, financial, for putting extranets in the cloud. Then there's social. And we all have heard all the announcements about Yammer. We now know that the Yammer integration is happening in the cloud first. It may or may not happen on-premise. But that is certainly Microsoft's very clearly stated big bet, for better or worse, in the cloud. And so the new features are up in the cloud and are easy to get going on. And then one of the most interesting scenarios that I think is good for Office 365 is what I call user-driven scenarios. The business scenario here is we've got a team or a project that needs to achieve certain things, and to do that, they're going to need to customize beyond what SharePoint normally has. Now, as soon as you go out of the box on-premise, it gets challenging because you're having to manage governance of customizations. If you're going to use the app model, there's all kinds of things you need to do on-premise with DNS and SSL to make everything work really smoothly and tightly. In the cloud, it's already set up for the app model. And so if users need certain types of functionality, they can just go to the app store and install it. They can self-serve their own customizations through the new app model. And there are some wickedly cool customizations available in Office 365 as apps. I always talk about one from AvPoint, which you can see at their booth. I'll be there tomorrow, which is their meetings application. For the history of time, companies have had challenges with meetings. Now, Outlook takes care of scheduling the meetings, but what about keeping track of notes, combining everyone's notes, remembering what you decided in one meeting and put off to the next, and then three months later remembering, why did we make that decision? Those kinds of things have always plagued businesses, and this app solves those. It's an amazingly, wickedly cool app. There's also an app that synchronizes calendars and task entries across on-premise and cloud versions of SharePoint 2010 and 2013 so that a user can have one calendar and one task list that is synchronized to all these different places. Brilliant stuff. Requires the app model. The app model is a not insignificant barrier to entry for on-premise, and the cloud is ready to go. So those user-driven solutions that are taking advantage of apps, that's really what it's about. The cloud is ready. On-premise will probably take you some time to get there. And there are certain types of apps that won't anytime in the near future be available on-premise. Then there's the Windows Azure VMs. This model is all of a sudden significantly more attractive because of the new pricing that was announced earlier this month. There's benefits if you're an MSDN subscriber. There's different lower costs. And there's also, very importantly, zero cost if the virtual machine is shut down now. So if the VM isn't running, you're not paying for it. And that means those things all together make for some very interesting scenarios for Windows Azure VMs, the first of which is public-facing websites. Now, Office 365 has a public-facing website capability, but anyone who's used it knows it's, you know, barely a brochure site. If you really want to do public-facing website stuff, right now it's Azure VMs. Part of that is because in Office 365 currently, there's no content by search capability, so that's a big limit in of itself. So in Azure, you can do your public-facing websites because you own the box. It's there. You can do what you want with it. It's your virtual machine. Small farms for remote projects or users. If you've got a project that is in a remote location, rather than configuring some crazy WAN technology to bring them into your data center, put the team site in Office 365. Dev environments, especially now that you can not pay for a VM when it's shut down, this is a great opportunity for dev environments. And disaster recovery is now really possible with especially the new pricing in Azure, because now you can be, if you're using virtualization, you can be effectively replicating your VMs up to the cloud so that the day something happens to your data center, you just turn on the VMs in the cloud. So there's some very, very interesting and valuable scenarios that are possible in this cloud that aren't possible on-prem or in Office 365. And last but not least, if you really are sort of using the cloud, you know that in Office 365 you can't do full trust solutions. So if you want to install a third-party tool that gets installed as a full trust solution, not possible. In Azure VMs it is. So there are some great scenarios for Windows Azure VMs as well as Office 365. Now, whenever I start talking to customers about the cloud, there are always concerns they raise. But what about security? What about data sovereignty? What about blah, 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 blah? Let's talk about some of these things to sort of lay them out. And these aren't all the concerns, but these are the big ones. First, lack of flexibility. We can't customize the cloud the way we can customize on-premise. We can't do full trust solutions in Office 365. Security. Microsoft isn't secure. The NSA is spying on our data. You name it. Lack of security. Data sovereignty. We cannot put this kind of information in the Microsoft cloud because it sits outside of our borders. Australia is a good example of that. Germany. In the last two weeks, they raised the NSA spying issues. Or the US Patriot Act. Data loss. What happens if the cloud goes away? All right, so those are concerns that are raised. And there's some valid points there, but let's talk about some other perspectives here. And these considerations I'm going to give you do not line up one-to-one with the concerns, but they'll give you some ideas. First, in the end, you have to make a difficult choice. That's what IT is all about balancing out what the business is trying to do with what you can really achieve, manage, and afford. You have to make difficult choices, and you have to ask difficult questions. And depending on how broad or narrow your scope a vision is, the answer might be very clear or very difficult. Let me tell you some stories here. The first one relates to lack of flexibility. There is the idea that you can't do full trust solutions in Office 365. So there is a very big global company that is moving full bore into Office 365. And as part of that move, they identified that Office 365 was less flexible. They would not be able to do full trust solutions. So instead of just saying, oh, we can't use Office 365, they asked the difficult question, which was, what value are we getting out of the customizations we've implemented, and what risk do those customizations introduce? What they discovered was, first of all, the risk was huge, because they were not able to apply patches and service packs into their farms quickly because they didn't know what was going to break. So there was risk. Then they looked at the value those customizations were providing, and they realized the value wasn't as high as those customizations were expecting to deliver. And so they decided, across the board, no more customizations. If it can't be done as full trust, or sorry, as sandbox or as an app, we're just not going to do it. We'll find some other way to meet that business objective. That was a tough question to ask and a tough answer, particularly for the developers, to hear. But the companies made the tough choice and moved forward with that. And sometimes it's a question of scope of perspective. So let's take data. Security and data sovereignty as an example. We shouldn't put data in the cloud because name a reason. In New Zealand, this is a true story here. Law firms, legal firms in Christchurch, across the board, several years ago, had a policy of no data goes into any cloud because name the reason. That policy was great until there was an earthquake that wiped out all of the law firms and their offsite backup facilities. All their data was lost. Guess where their data is going now? Into the cloud. Their scope of perspective initially was, we're only concerned about these concerns about security and blah, blah, blah. And now they realize the bigger concern is, we might lose our data if we don't do it. And as soon as their perspective changed, all of a sudden the answer to the difficult question changed. So that's just one story there. Reality and perception, mythology and hype also play into it. So I work for defense contractors in the United States, for several of them, and they have to be ridiculously secure, of course. They're building systems that support the military, and literally people die if something doesn't work. There's been this traditional perspective of Microsoft isn't secure, we're more secure. And over the last couple of years, many of these organizations have done really thoughtful inner examination of their own security and realized that their service account passwords weren't really as tight as they wanted them to be. Their administrators still shared passwords with each other now and then. And their data centers, well, they had some physical security, but they weren't really as perfect as they would want. And when organizations really look at their own security, they realize they're not as good as they give themselves credit for. And then Microsoft, on the other hand, is being forced, because it's a global organization, to live up to every security standard of all of its customers worldwide. It actually has a lot of pressure on it security-wise, and it, in many ways, ends up being more secure than the organizations themselves. Another example is of scope of perspective with security is over 2011 and or sorry 2012 and 2013, I've had several customers tell me that they are moving their most sensitive data into the cloud. Now, the first time I heard that, I was shocked. I couldn't believe I was hearing this, because everyone's always worried about cloud security. The reason was very interesting, and that is, it's not just about permissions anymore. It's not just that Dan can read a document or cannot. It's, if Dan can read a document, can he print out a hard copy? Can he forward it in email to someone outside of the organization? It now is much more about information rights management, about controlling the tasks that someone performs on information. Information rights management is a heavy infrastructure to put in place on premise. It takes a PKI, it takes a lot of management and time and cultural change. It's already there in Office 365 Plan E4. It's free. It's part of that plan. So you can get information rights management by subscribing to Office 365, or you can take 2 or 3 years to get it on-premise. That's the kind of question my customers were asking themselves. And they decided they couldn't wait for on-premise. It's going to go in the cloud today. They're going to move forward with IRM on-premise. And at that point in time, they'll think about moving it back. But I know by then they won't, because they won't have had any problems in the cloud that they wouldn't have had on-premise. So, scope of perspective again. It's not just about permissions. It's about perhaps other things like information rights management. Rapid evolution also plays into this. The things we think today may have been true 6 months ago but aren't true now, or may be true today but won't be true a few months down the road. Things are changing so fast. A couple of examples of this are data centers. Microsoft is opening data centers all over the world at a ridiculous pace. They've announced, for example, a data center in Australia where they had real concerns about data sovereignty because they didn't want their data sitting in Singapore and Hong Kong. Now, Microsoft hasn't said for sure that Office 365 will go into those data centers, but you know, if you do the math, that data center is probably going to do more than just Xbox. So, you know, things are changing so fast that if you worry about the next 5 years, you probably don't know what Microsoft is going to be doing. I don't know what Microsoft is doing in the next year, let alone in 5 years. Things are changing very, very, very quickly. Regulations and laws are also changing quickly. Today, there might be a law that says you can't put data in this certain type of data in this certain type of cloud. But as things like the earthquake in New Zealand happen, laws change because business goes to government and say we must be able to put it into the cloud because otherwise we fail. So there's this evolution of legal regulations as well. But I think what most people are concerned about is job loss. If you really boil it down, people's fear of the cloud in many cases is about their own job. And there's a couple of stories here related to this. Real story. CEO of a Fortune 500 organization asked a consultant, true story, what can I do to poison pill my Exchange environment so that it can never be migrated to Office 365? What can I do to ensure that it never can be migrated? Real question to a real consultant. Why? Because she really liked her two Exchange administrators and didn't want to see them lose their jobs. So that wasn't even about her losing her job. It was about her administrators losing their jobs. Crazy, crazy stuff. Now, I personally think that this is the most exciting time ever to work in IT. Because as I've been in IT, especially over the last 10 or 15 years, IT has become about resetting passwords and adding users to groups and building infrastructure. And I think and answering calls at 3 a.m. because a network is down. And I don't know many of us who really like doing those things. And so being able to outsource those to the cloud, I think is a good thing. And B, what the people I meet tend to be in technology because we love technology and we love solving problems. We're really problem solvers at heart. And now, as we offload those plumbing infrastructures into the cloud, we now can deliver business value. We can ask our business, what problem can I solve for you? And what cool toys and pieces can I put together to address those business objectives? And now we can manage this portfolio of lots of toys instead of being told by our business, you can only afford this one toy and you have to use it for the next 5 years. I think it's a really, really cool time to be in IT because jobs are being transformed, not lost. And one other main point I want to mention here is it's not all cloud or all on-premise. We're talking about workloads. And even in Germany, for example, where certain types of information currently must be kept on-premise must be kept in Germany based on law, A, those laws are going to change eventually, but B, you still have other workloads that don't use those classes of information. So certain teams, certain projects, certain workloads can go into the cloud while those workloads continue to stay on-premise. Just like you continue to use SharePoint and email to achieve your business. So as you think about the cloud, you want to think about what you're trying to do, your business requirements. Can those things be met on-premise, in Windows Azure, or in Office 365? Now, there is some bad news from a technical perspective. Right now, migration is a tough story. There are no out-of-box tools to migrate your SharePoint environment into the cloud. Now, that has to change. You've got to think Microsoft has it on the very front burner to give us tools to lift our environments into Office 365, because that's where they want us to be. But there is no out-of-box tool set right now. Management of the cloud is okay. But it's not super, super rich. There's no out-of-box backup and restore capabilities other than what Microsoft is doing itself. And then you get into a hybrid environment, and it does start being painful. A SharePoint hybrid environment, you start thinking about how do I create content on-premise and then publish it into the cloud? How do I really unify search? There's a partial answer out of the box, but it doesn't answer all scenarios. Compliance, e-discovery, completely separate. So if you get a lawsuit, you're going to have to do e-discovery on-premise, e-discovery in the cloud, merge them together somehow. Social is completely disconnected, especially now that Yammer is in the cloud and on-prem is still SharePoint. And metadata, your taxonomy. You can have the same terms on-premise and in the cloud, but they're not linked together in any way. The GUIDs are different. They're completely different term stores. So there are definitely some pain points. You have to think about those. You have to consider them as you decide what the value of SharePoint is in relation to a business objective. And remember that there are third-party tools. And the third parties really, there are third-party solutions to every single one of these concerns. So when should we move to the cloud? Well, you might sort of know my answer already, which is don't just move to the cloud. Keep moving forward. Look at each workload and identify what belongs in which cloud as far as what can, where, which cloud can increase value or decrease risk for you. Microsoft definitely wants us in the cloud. They've made that painfully clear. And they're being very aggressive in pricing. When you take a look at what Microsoft is doing, at, even at the consumer level, you know they announced Office Mobile for iPhones last week, and it's free if you're an Office 365 subscriber. They're doing everything they can to get us to want Office 365, and I personally think they're being really smart about it. And in my biggest customers, they're fire sailing it. I have customers who are paying, you know, $1 per user for Office 365, just crazy stuff based on the volume of business they're already doing. So Microsoft wants us in the cloud, but the tools and the guidance aren't there yet. So it's not an easy transition. We have to be careful, and we have to just sip the Kool-Aid, not drink it all at once. However, the journey is inevitable. We will end up in the cloud. Over time, workload by workload, the cloud just makes more sense for 90 to 100% of what we do as a business, or 90 to 99 maybe. So we're going to be going into the cloud. Keep that in mind as you make decisions on-premise. How do you architect your on-premise SharePoint 2013 farm? What can you do to make it reflect Office 365 so that when you do migrate, it's smoother? Microsoft has architectural guidance for that. How do you develop solutions on-premise using the app model so that you have cloud-ready apps that can be moved to the cloud eventually? Make decisions now that will support you as you move forward into the cloud. One second, I'll get a couple of tweets out. And in the end, we will be there. But for now, I think most of us need to create a roadmap that is really about hybrid. Not just hybrid of Office 365, Windows, Azure, VMs, and on and private cloud, but hybrid of versions. Don't give up. Don't think you have to give up SharePoint 2013 to get 2010 to get 2013. You didn't give up email when you got SharePoint. Now, obviously, there's costs, but if you follow my roadmap, you'll see the costs aren't double. We talked about moving services from 2010 to 2013. In any normal SharePoint environment, those services are running on dedicated servers. You have your application servers in 2010. Now I'm saying just put those as application servers in 2013. Same number of servers, just running a different version. So there are some more server licenses, but not necessarily that many. But you need to think about costs. That's part of the equation. Different versions can help, different editions. I have customers who are using literally all four, 2010 Foundation, 2010 Server, 2013 Foundation, and 2013 Server, and Office 365 in different combinations. And some of them are even looking at using Azure for disaster recovery. And then present all of this as a series of services to your business, as workloads. As we in IT become more agile service delivery organizations, we need to be giving our business a service, and they shouldn't even care what platform we're putting it on. Because today, team sites might be on-premise. 6 months from now, we might be putting them on the cloud. Users shouldn't notice the difference. That's what we should be aiming at. And in many cases, it's technically possible today. In some cases, there are a few rough edges. But that's certainly what we need to be aiming at. So, you know, if we boil it down, I think even IT doesn't matter. It's really the business that matters. And we in IT only matter when we're increasing value and decreasing risk. The world around us is becoming a service. So we in IT either need to become a service ourselves or risk losing out to services. That's our challenge from a sort of meta level in IT in 2013 and 2014. So upgrade SharePoint and upgrade IT. Do some of both, and you'll find that you can move effectively into this new world. I have one very favorite customer that has rebranded IT. It's no longer information technology, it's innovation technology. As part of that, they have become a value provider to their organization. They now sit on committees and participate in discussions that they never did before because the business sees them as providing value, not just as a cost. It's an exciting time to be in IT, and this can all be part of it. So as we say in Hawaii, mahalo, thank you, and a hui ho, until we see each other next time. There are some slides in the deck that will point you to additional sessions and resources in the event. Please also do evaluate the event. If you've got your phone, please scan the quick read code and evaluate, because the evaluations are important to us. We are out of time, but I will stay here to answer questions, and if I have to pack up for the next speaker, I'll move out into the hallway. Thank you guys very much for coming. Keep the conversation going. Please email me afterwards, and have a wonderful time at TechEd 2013. Thank you.